Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another broadcast of Something for the Fellas with your host, Curtis Taylor Sr. Something for the Fellas is an innovative, thought-provoking show geared toward the upliftment, encouragement, and renewal of the African-American male. However, all are welcome, regardless of race, creed, or gender. And now, get ready. Here's your host, Mr. Curtis Taylor Sr.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another broadcast of Something for the Fellas with myself, yours truly, Curtis Taylor Sr. as your host. And before, as I do on every Thursday night before I start a broadcast, I'd just like to take an opportunity to thank God for another day and another opportunity to come before everyone with this format that has been known as Something for the Fellas. And I just want to take a quick minute to thank all of you, whether it's been through Facebook, social media, Twitter, LinkedIn, whatever the case may be, on for your prayers and your condolences on the death of my brother, Byron Keith January Sr. in Lake Charles, Louisiana. And I just ask that those of you that can and will, keep your prayers going for his family. You know, he had four sons and one daughter. He has a few grandchildren. So we just ask that you guys definitely keep the January family in your prayers, and I'm definitely appreciative of that. And also, as always, rest in paradise to my big brother, Byron January. We don't miss you, man. But the show must and will go on. And with that said, what we're going to do tonight, I'm honored to have none other than my great friend and great brother, Dr. Joseph King, out of Saginaw, Michigan, by way of Montgomery, Alabama. How you doing, Doc?
I'm great, brother. It's a pleasure to be here. And I thank God Almighty for the opportunity, man, to be able to share on this most serious issue, man. And my condolences to your brother's family on the passing.
Hey, man, we definitely appreciate that. Yeah, tonight's going to be a great, what I honestly feel in my heart, it's going to be a great broadcast. We're going to be talking about the zero tolerance policies within our public school system, that many of the school systems throughout the United States has adopted these zero tolerance policies and things of that nature. And, you know, when Joseph and myself, we talked about this really about a month ago, trying to hammer in a date and a time that we can do this broadcast and everything, because it's definitely something that has to be talked about, especially with situations that's going on in our school systems. You know, it's kind of, I don't want to even say it's a coincidence. It's almost like a divine intervention that we have in this broadcast tonight, when in actuality, there was a situation that happened at my son's middle school here in Decatur yesterday, where a young man brought a gun to school. And the thing that struck me the most is that my son was actually in the gym for a second period. Him and the young man had PE together, and they were sitting right next to each other on the one of the sets of bleachers just talking, and he was asking, you know, why was he carrying his book bag, because he never had that book bag with him or whatever. And, you know, the little boy was engaging in conversation with my son, and he said that the little boy slammed the bag down on the gym floor, and my son said he heard the loud metal clink, and I'm just thanking God that pistol didn't go off, you know, possibly injuring the young man or anyone else or my son or anyone that might have been in that area. So it was like, wow, what a coincidence. This just happened on yesterday, and you and I had already planned for this broadcast on tonight. And I was like, man, that's kind of falling hand in hand with what we're talking about. But the thing about it is this. What I'm going to do, I mean, you know, I've had you, Joe, I've had you on the broadcast on several different occasions. But
yes, sir.
I want to hear what I'm going to do. I'm sitting on my chat room real quick, and I'm going to just give everybody some admin stuff real quick. But, yeah. What I'm doing, as I'm sitting in my chat room, for those that may not have heard you on the previous broadcast that you've already appeared on, why don't you give us a brief history of yourself real quick, sir.
Okay. Well, for those that don't know me, my name is Joseph King, Shanetto King, and I am an ex-offender. You know, I did some time, several bits behind the prison walls, and I did a total of over 22 years. And during those times, during that time, I ultimately transformed my life through education. And I've come to see the importance of education and the need for it if we're going to really deal with issues of recidivism, crime in our communities, and such. I came particularly interested in zero tolerance as I was doing a paper for a class, an essay for a class, and the impact of zero tolerance on our children, poor and minority children. One thing I've seen is that there's not enough community involvement on this issue. We're not bringing this issue to the forefront in the manner that we could. So tonight, I thought that we would try and figure out, you know, what can we do? You know, what steps can we take right now, you know, to start eliminating the effects of zero tolerance? To give you a brief history on zero tolerance, zero tolerance was adopted across the country in 1993. It was the result, though, of a drug law, as many of you may well remember, Reagan's war on drugs. This is where the concept or the theory of zero tolerance emerged out of. It was during the year 1986, however, that a plan, a program, if you will, was put together by a U.S. attorney. His name is Peter Nunes. And what that program was designed to do, it was designed to confiscate and impound all of any property or watercraft boats, if you will, that were found to have trace amounts of drugs on them. Okay, and a couple of years later, the U.S. Attorney General Edward Meese, you know, he ordered that this policy be implemented and that properties and vehicles would be seized for the same. Later on, now, what we're talking about, how does this relate to school discipline? It amazed me how a drug policy could be taken and integrated into the school system as a means of disciplining our children, you know, for minor rule violations. Okay, now, it was under...
Let me just stop you real second, because I'm just, I don't want to leave, because this broadcast, this information that we're going to put out is imperative, and I want to make sure that everyone that wants to be a part of tonight's broadcast can and will. Just real quick, admin note concerning the chat room. For all my listeners, the chat room is up. It is running. It is available. And, again, as always, the only admin notes I have, it will ask you if you want to participate with tonight's broadcast with myself and Brother Joseph King, Dr. King. It's going to ask for your name and your email address, and this is not to solicit your information to put you on any type of call list or any third-party purposes or anything of that nature. It will just allow me to see who you are in a chat room, and it will allow you to type whatever your question, comment, or concern may be, whether it's to myself or Dr. King, and either one of us can address it accordingly. So that's the only admin notes I have on that chat room as far as that goes, and what we're going to do real quick, because it is up, and also for those of you that are going to be live streaming, we definitely thank you for your support by doing that as well. And for those of you I'm going to thank in advance that may live stream a little bit later on at your earliest convenience. And for all of my callers that will call in live, as always what I do is, because just for safety purposes, I will announce the area code that you're calling from and the last four digits of your number. And, again, that's just for safety purposes, even though I appreciate all the support that everyone gives for Something Up for the Fellas, but I don't know who might be on the other lines or who might be live streaming, listening, or whatever the case may be. So that's definitely for your safety, and we're going to keep it that way. But real quick, I'm going to take a real quick commercial break. Joe, we're going to come back, and we're going to get deep into this broadcast for tonight. And again, I thank everyone that's been supporting Something for the Fellas, whether you've been supporting from day one 4 years ago or whether you've gradually come on board. I just want to let everyone know that I'm eternally grateful for it. So we're going to take a real quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. To the chat room, whoever you were, again, it just has you as guest 3827 for, again, and this is just public service announcements. For those of you that want to participate via the chat room, the only reason it's going to ask for you to load up your name and email is so that, as I explained earlier, that I can see who you are and you can tell me where you're typing from or whatever the case may be. But it will allow us to see who you are and allow us to see whatever your question, comment, or concern may be and give me, myself, the opportunity or Brother King the opportunity to address that. So that's the only reason it's going to ask. And I, whoever you are, I just want to say thank you. And if you decide to come back into the chat room again, I'll be moderating back and forth from the studio to the chat room, but that's the only admin notes for that. All right, Dr. King, Brother Joseph, right before we went to commercial break, you were about to expound on how they took a policy that was really created to target the war on drugs and correlated that with the school system. So you can pick right back up where you were with that. I'd appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Let me stipulate, though, for the audience, I appreciate the accolade that the brother give me with the doctor. I do not have a doctor's degree. I do hope to one day, though, have that. I appreciate it so much, brother.
Doc, I already know you're working towards it as we speak. I'm just speaking into existence. So we good.
They say speak those things into existence, even though they're not.
There you go, Doc. There you go.
All right. But anyway, so we were talking about how it was amazing to me that a drug policy, a policy designed to punish drug offenders, criminal offenders, could be implemented or integrated into the school system as a means of disciplining our children. Again, this happened to be done up under the presidency of Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton in 1994 signed what is known as the Gun-Free Schools Act, and it was passed in order to with the stipulation. Well, let me back up a little bit, though. This act mandated school in order to keep their funding to implement zero tolerance policies for students found to be in possessions of weapons. Okay. Now, I can't give you right off hand the source, but I have read personally that during that time that this policy was implemented, the gun violence was really not an issue on school grounds, on public school grounds. And so that was interesting as well. Under this policy, statistics show, I give you, for instance, in 2012, coming from the Civil Rights Data Collection, 2014 publication, in the state of Alabama, 22% of black African-American males were given out-of-school suspension in comparison to 8% of white males given out-of-school suspension. So, and we see that 13% of black African females were given out-of-school suspensions versus 3% of white females that were given out-of-school suspensions. So, going back to the incident that you talked about as we opened up about the little boy coming to school, you know, around your son with a gun, you know, in his book bag. Every parent wants their student to be in a safe and healthy learning environment, no doubt. But no parent, I venture, would say that they feel comfortable with their child, you know, going to a school that looks like a minimum security prison system. Note, you know, and this is what this ultimately turned into, because under this policy, under these zero tolerance policies, this is when we began to see the machines that, you know, what they call them, it eludes me now, but you want the metal detector machines, right, metal detecting machines and things in schools, you know, one way in, one way out, but also, What's very interesting and we need to take note of is that it's early on in elementary that the disparity in out-of-school discipline is happening. You see, that disparity is not as great, though it's there, it's not as great in the higher grades. So what's been shown through research is that when you take a child and remove them from school, particularly in reference to black students who unfortunately more often than not go to schools underfunded, man, that we're behind. In Michigan today, I was looking at a statistic in Michigan. Michigan is at the bottom of the list nationally in terms for black student performance. So when you take minor issues, these policies are being used for minor issues that could be disciplined and taken care of in school and suspending these children. An incident that I can refer to is one young girl. Her mother had packed her lunch bag and put a knife in there so she could spread the peanut butter on her bread during her break. Okay. She discovered the knife in her book bag, gave it to the teacher, and she was then referred to the principal's office, who then suspended her. Mandatory. You see, no malice in the picture at all. So this is the problem, see, with this zero tolerance policy. Black students are being disproportionately targeted. The result is isolation, marginalization, and ostracizement. They're going to they've been introduced into the juvenile systems at an early age. It's called the school to prison pipeline. We know the acronym, the school to prison pipeline. Students are being punished for minor rule violations. Donna Ford has done a magnificent research, man. She continues to do. She's a champion, a vanguard on this issue. Has said that the problem exists within the incompetency of the teachers not being able to relate to the students. So what, you know, we need to do is get better teachers, more qualified teachers in the classroom that they understand. And when we're talking about qualified teachers, we're talking about culturally qualified, culturally competent teachers, not just teachers that understand, you know, how to teach according to the structure, but understands culture, you see. And so, again, the zero tolerance policy, it handicapped school principals. Because here, now, once this policy is implemented, you don't have the latitude to say, well, all right, to take a case by case, which is that in reality what it should be, you know, clearly. So this is one of the things that we want to bring up, and we want to see how do the people feel? What do we need to do? You know, what do we need to do to come together collectively? You know, and there's research out there that I can refer to that shows that zero tolerance has not even made schools more safer. And I'm looking right now for the Skiba. You can refer to Skiba versus Skiba and Nest in 2001. You know, where he did an analysis of zero tolerance policy and the impact on school disciplinary procedures. That will give you a complete breakdown of it. As a matter of fact, he's a research scholar at Indiana University.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir. Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, what I was going to say is that it amazes me that, because, you know, I did my research as well when we decided that we was going to cover this issue. And
right.
It's like, okay, for example, I can give you where I live at in Decatur, Alabama. They developed these the CASE system, where it's another building away from all the schools where they send what they deem to be problem children. You know, and it's like, you know, just going up there and seeing the age disparity. I mean, you got eight, nine-year-old kids up there with 15, 16, and 17-year-old kids. You know, it's
right.
They all just put them all together, and it's like, wow. I mean, this kid probably doesn't even realize, you got a first grader that probably doesn't know or realize that he did something to warrant being put out of his normal school into this situation. To where,
exactly.
You know, by him being that young and they're still very impressionable, and you got these older teenagers that might be a little more knuckleheaded than normal or whatever the case may be, and then they're able to interact with these little kids and able to, you know, by these youngsters being so impressionable to plant all type of stuff in their heads. And I'm like, you know, it just boggles, it's mind-boggling to me. And then I remember, like, for example, growing up at my school in Louisiana, I never heard of a school resource office.
Right.
And I did the research, and it's funny that, you know, you left Montgomery, Alabama, you're now in Saginaw, Michigan. Saginaw, Michigan was the second city in the United States of America that implemented the school resource officer program in 1966. I was like, now what's the coincidence of that? You know, but, I mean, as we both were looking at these statistics, it's like, whoa. And it's not only targeting blacks as far as the minority goes, it's really, especially in the southern states, is really, really, really targeting these the Hispanics and the Latino descent students. Because, I mean, first and foremost, you already got a language barrier.
Right.
You know,
and that's a major problem.
And as you alluded to earlier, we don't have the teachers that are culturally, I mean, the last 3-4 years I've seen to where they've attempted to get better at it, but for the longest, you know, you had teachers that weren't culturally to handle these different ethnic groups and things of that nature, and it's like they're quick to like, okay, you know what, this is a problem child, we're going to get rid of him, or whatever the case may be. And then the numbers that you gave were like 18% to a single-digit percent, then 12% to 3%, and it's like, really? So that, I mean, one thing about it, numbers don't lie. That,
numbers.
At the end of the day, numbers do not lie. And when you got
they
that jump, much sure. of a disparity, that much of a discrepancy, that much of, like you said, it's so disproportionate, and broadcast, and I'm going to do more broadcasts like this because this is not one of these, like, to coin a phrase from my big brother Tony Stallings, this broadcast is not sexy, not by a long shot, but it's a broadcast that needs to be done. It's a broadcast that needs to be heard, and I'm going to, after we get done, and I promote the show after we are done, I'm going to implore everyone to listen to the broadcast and listen to the information that we're putting out, because as long as you are being made aware, that's paramount in my opinion, because a lot of people just don't know. A lot of people, the average parent might not even know with a school-aged child that these zero tolerance policies are even being implemented.
Right.
They don't take the time to make themselves aware of what's going on in their children's school. And then it takes something like the incident that happened at my son's school yesterday and recent history of other schools for all of a sudden everybody want to be up in arms and get involved, where you didn't take the initiative to get all the information firsthand in the first place.
Exactly. And we see that a lot. We see that a lot because when we put together community events asking, you know, the families to come out, you know, and become aware, because it's true. The more knowledgeable that we become about this situation, I believe that the more active we're going to get involved. You know, you're going to start seeing more people get involved. And what the administration is seeing, that a lot of parents are not really showing any concern about their child's education. They're not showing up at the PTA meetings, you know.
Right.
So we need to find ways where we can, you know, build or solidify, make more solid that support system, because it takes the school, the principals, the teachers, the community, parents. You know, it takes all of us working together to create that support system, you know. People don't like saying, you know, the reality is this, the research is not lying. You know, zero tolerance policies are specifically designed to disenfranchise black students. And I say that because once a child is introduced into that legal system, that justice system, you know, the odds increase tremendously that they're not going to graduate from high school. They become high school dropouts, you know, and we need to stop that. We need to get in front of this thing and find out, you know, what exactly can we do? Because, and I'm saying, and we know that it definitely impacts white students as well, but you can look at the numbers. And I didn't mention the Jeffers Act. The Jeffers Act was an amendment to the Gun-Free Schools Act that allowed the zero-tolerance policies to be applied towards students with disabilities. You know, so when you're looking at the statistics in between the 2011-2012 school year, 8% of students without disabilities were suspended out of school. 16% of students with disabilities were suspended out of school.
Yo, real quick, man, I'm not going to cut you off, but the phone lines are blowing up. And for those of you that are just joining in, if you're a first-time caller, what I do for safety's sake is that I would say the area code that you're calling from and the last four digits of your phone number. And when I do so, I'll ask that you give us your name and where you're calling from and go ahead and whatever comments or concerns that you may have. So the first caller I'm going to do that for, area code 334, and the last four digits of your phone number is 8020. Caller, if you would, introduce yourself, tell us where you're calling from, and whatever comments that you may have.
Hello, my brother. I knew you were going to do that as soon as I called in and was listening. I said, you're going to get me on this phone. I don't know why you like for me to take over your show.
Linda, it doesn't even matter. Sister Linda,
I know Sister Long. She's championing on the front line, brother.
Hey,
this is Linda, and I'm calling from Selma.
You have Sister Linda, you have free range no matter when you call in my broadcast. I mean,
that's right.
That's just what it is. But we're glad to have you tonight and everything. And like I said, I got some more that I'm going down my line. Okay, real quick here. My next call.
Zero tolerance is just for, to me, black students. White students don't go from school to jail as often as black students do. So what we need to do, and we talk about getting mothers and parents involved. If a child is in 10th, 11th, 12th grade and they haven't been involved, how you going to get them there? You have to start early. When they start, I want to say get a mom's program going, a mother of many's program going, because sometimes parents don't know how to feel inferior when it comes to talking to, you know, teachers and professionals. And then we have a system where if something is going on and that we can get them into, we can go with them to talk to people. We understand what they're talking about. That's what I'm talking about when I say mothers of many. I would be willing to do that in Selma. I have always been a part of my children's schools. So the school, everybody in the school knew me. And just last week, I was in Clearwater, Florida, speaking at a high school. And out of the 95 or more high schools I've spoken to in the past year, I had three young men, and this is showing up ethnic a group of students, three young men that decided they needed me to show them what it meant to be respectful. I was up there telling my story, and these three young men were sitting down front, and they were talking louder than me. So, you know, I went over and I say, "I'm sorry you had a question. I talk loud. You know, I didn't hear you." No, you know, kind of stuff. So I went back to telling the story, and they got even louder and more disrespect. So I told the 900 kids that were listening to put a pin in where I am right now. Excuse me, I have some housekeeping duty. So I went over there and I said, "Listen, if you don't want to know what's going on, then don't stop others. Because, see, I need you to get up and go." "What you mean?" I said, "I mean, ABC, 1, 2, 3, get up and leave. I don't work for the school system." And then I asked God to escort them out. I even told the principal, "I got this." And as they were going out, the children stood up and applauded. Now, there's always going to be some children that do not want to do, that have nothing on their mind, and we ain't going to be able to change that. I don't care what color they are. But there are some that do want to do and just don't know how to do. And we have to start showing them now from the cradle. Because they come here smart. We have to show them now from the cradle. If we're going to save them, we got to save them when they get born. And that's all I got to say. If y'all in Selma and y'all know Linda Lowry, you can come by my house. I'll go with you to the school. I know how to talk to folks. I don't have to curse them out. You know. So, hey. That's all I had to say, my brother. I'm going to keep listening because there are callers out there that have something real to say. And I want to hear.
We definitely appreciate you. And always, you already know you have an open invite, no matter what broadcast it is. But we got another caller. And again, the way it's done is, caller, what I'm going to do is give your area code and last four digits of your phone number. And if you would, give us your name and where you're calling from and go ahead with whatever your comments may be. And that caller will be from area code 256. The last four digits of your phone number is 8416.
Hello, this is Chester Ayers. I'm from Decatur, Alabama. Me and Curtis are well acquainted. My thing is, just like the lady just spoke of, in order to catch these teenagers, we have to start at the elementary level. I've been on both ends. I've been on both ends of it. I've worked with the secondary level for the past 5 years, but this year God saw fit to put me at the elementary level, and what I've seen this year is, like, totally astonishing. I've seen pre-K, kindergarten, first graders that have the attitude to where you're not going to tell me anything, and I don't care if you call my mom and dad. It's just already set in them. And I don't really, the thing is, I think that it's the lack of men in their lives. It's the mothers can do a lot, but when a young man sees a man and he knows his man is there and really has sincerity in his heart, it's a different story. And what I'm doing now and trying to do in Decatur is I have an event on Monday where I ask all the men in the community to come out. If you have a job, come out and let these elementary kids see that real men are present and we will help them.
Yes, sir.
I just believe that the only way we're going to turn this thing around is to put things in order with the men leading. And that's just going to have to happen. And I don't know if we have to have the mothers to sign off on men being able to come to, when they have problems at school, a group of men be able to come and intervene. But that's just what's going to have to happen. If the men in the community don't step up, then what can we say?
Absolutely. I totally agree with you, brother. Totally agree with you. And that's one of the things that I myself, you know, is trying to accomplish with Reclaiming Black Manhood. We trying to say, all right, it's time for black men to reclaim. We got to reclaim our manhood, reclaim our rightful place, you know, and that's going to start with self-respect. That's going to start with respecting our women, respecting our children, and doing as you say, you know. And once we can get that male presence back in there and show and be right on hand and show them that, look, we got this. You don't have to send our children to jail. They don't have to be introduced into that. We can stop violence in our schools and in our community today if we decided to come together. Do we really want to do it? Becomes a question. Do we really want to stop it? You know,
that's the big issue. And not to break you off, but that's a big issue too, because I see that the thing is the medicating of a kid.
Right,
the medication
right.
of the kids come with so much. The mama gets a check, so now the mama depends on that check that she's getting from that medication for that kid, and now the kid has that in his system and on his paperwork that it's gonna carry from him from kindergarten all the way through 12th grade, and then the college if he goes to college. But everybody knows this kid is medicated, therefore he's in another level, and I just don't know what we're gonna do to have to turn this thing around. Like I said, my thing is for all the men to step back and step up to the plate and get it started like this. And that's the only way I think that God is going to restore everything. If the men step up and be men and quit waiting on the women to do everything. I love my black woman, but I'm tired of the excuses with the black men having excuses. There's no excuses. I don't care if you got felonies, whatever. Your past is your past. We live
absolutely.
Now. Let's step up to the plate and do what we got to do.
Absolutely, brother. I totally agree with you. And I just, you know, I use myself as that example. I'm an ex-offender, you know, but I'm among a rising group. You know, it's a rising tide of ex-offenders, man, that's making substantial contributions on the scene right now. For instance, you look, I just named Shaka Senor, you know, right now, the brother. You know, he's doing big things in prison reform and education reform. Brother Steffels in Detroit. You know, he's doing it. You know, ex-offenders, you can only, your past can limit you if you choose to allow it. You
correct.
See? If you choose to allow it to do that, now this don't mean that the door is going to be easy. It's going to be easy. No, it's not easy. Faith, like Steve Harvey said, faith don't make it easy. It make it possible.
Correct.
So I'm thankful that being given the opportunity to start speaking now. This is my first, you know, not my this is not my first broadcast with Brother Curtis, but to be able to speak next month, you know, in Columbus, in regards to the school. Oh man, I'm nervous. Got to go. Oh Lord. But yeah, but ex-offenders, man, we need y'all to come on out of the shadows, man. You know, don't continue to allow yourself to be defined by tradition, man. By tradition, because we got to make our own. We got to make our own way. We got to make our own way.
And yes, Brother Joe and Chester, those both of you guys, what you guys have said is very, very profound. And the thing about, and I agree with both of you guys, it's going to take us as men. You know, we have those that are, of course, you know, we're first and foremost men, and we got those that are calling themselves to be leaders or whatever the case may be. And for the most part, it would seem that, you know, that they have the best interest at heart, sincerely. But like I said, it's like, you know, because Chester extended that invitation to myself to come to his program at Brookhaven Middle School on Monday morning.
Right.
And you know, Chess, I just want to applaud you for having the vision and the wherewithal to even implement such a function. And that title you used, Before the Storm, oh, man, that blew me away, because it's a storm out there. And we want to get these kids before they walk into that storm. So,
correct.
And like I said, when you called me and, you know, invited me and everything, and, you know, of course I had to make sure I was made myself available, and I called you back got back with you in 10 minutes. And like, all right, bro, you count me in. I'm on board.
Yeah.
You know, so,
correct.
And like I said, we definitely need the men to stand up, to step up, to come forth. And as Joe said, regardless of what your past is, because I totally, in total agreement that your past does not define you. It's what you do from today forward that will make a difference, or what you may or may not be remembered for. You know, everybody.
We definitely gonna vet you now.
I remember hearing a preacher say in a sermon a few years back, he said, what people gotta realize is that no matter who you are or where you come from, everybody gotta remember when and back then. He said, the only thing about it, some of you just never been caught.
Correct.
And I agree with that 150%. He said, everybody has a remember when and a back then. It's just some of you were fortunate enough to not get caught. But, man, like you said, Chester, it's going to take all of us. And I applaud you for that, what you're going to have going on Monday, and I'm definitely going to be in the building with you. And I've seen where a couple of more men have stepped forward and with their solidarity of showing up as well. But, yeah, man, this broadcast, like I said, I could have, you know, again, to coin my brother Tony Stoller's phrase from Soul of America Radio, this is not a sexy broadcast, and it's not intended to be, but this is a broadcast that definitely has to be put out there. This type of information has to be put out there, and more importantly, it has to not fall on deaf ears. So with that being said, for those of people that are going to live stream, we got, oh, my God, hold on one second, y'all. Got to make sure I'm not leaving. I'm going back and forth from the studio to the chat room, because God knows I don't want to be leaving no one out of this broadcast and this conversation. But, yeah, fellas, I mean, like, Joe, yourself, a total of 22 years throughout your life, incarceration, behind bars. Now you are the founder of Reclaiming Black Manhood. You have other initiatives working towards your doctorate degree. I mean, how many ex-offenders? There's a few out there, but we can pretty much count them that are like yourself and others that you mentioned earlier, that have paid their debt to society, so to speak, and now are taking it upon themselves to take an active role in trying to do some type of betterment for their community. So, brother, like, man, we've had this conversation I don't know how many times, Joe, and I tell you through your face, I tell you over the phone, man, I applaud you and your efforts, man. That is to be commended, I'm telling you.
I appreciate you, bro. You know, and it ain't easy. You know, it's not easy because, you know, it's times that you fall, you know, and it's times that I say, well, man, am I in, you know, is this really going, you know, am I doing the right thing? But ultimately, when I can lay down at night and say, well, look, I'm trying to fulfill the promise that I made to God Almighty to let my life be used, man, so others don't have to go down this path. And I have to give, you know, honor to Dr. Ford. Dr. Gilman Whiting had a conversation with Dr. Gilman Whiting, you know, and he was like, I was like, Doc, I don't have no doctorate degree, man. I ain't got no. He's like, and he kept on and kept on. He was like, bruh. He said, all right, here how we going to fix it. I want you to do this X, Y, Z, you know, say ABC, enroll in this and do that. And so I acted on that, man, you know, and now things are starting to turn around. You know, Dr. Donna Ford, Toby Scruggs, you know, and I thank God for the people that have been motivated to me when even my own family, man, when you got ex-offenders that come out and your family don't even support your venture. You know what I mean? But as long as, you know, and I'm one of them, so I can tell you, you know, but as long as I was, you know, in the street, you know what I'm saying, or making moves to try to, you know, do this or that, now, but let me say, okay, well, I got this event that I need you to support. I got these T-shirts that I need you to buy.
Yes,
you know, not one of them stepped up, bro.
Yes, sir.
Not one. But yet, it did not kill that spirit. You feel me?
Right.
It ain't going to kill that spirit. You can't. Because when I got people, you understand, that God put people in my life, people like Dr. Donald Ford, well, so what about your felony? You know what you know. If you need me, I'm there. I looked at their program. I was doing some research, bro, for my program, Urban Youth Enrichment Initiative, trying to find a delivery system. They got a program, the Scholar Identity Institute at Vanderbilt University. I was amazed by it. Her and Dr. Whiting put it together. She's my Facebook friend, and I asked her, I said, Dr. Ford, can I use this? And she's like, yeah. And I'm trying to get it implemented here in Michigan. You know, do my family help? No.
Everybody, I think the common thing is that every man that I've talked to that's trying to step up to the plate and start something and be that man that God wants them to be,
right,
ain't nobody's family's helping them, brother. I'm going to tell you straight up, everybody's going through the same thing, but the same struggle is we eagles. We supposed to fly.
Huh.
You ain't got time. You ain't got time to scoop down and worry about them chickens on the ground. You got to keep flying.
Man,
an eagle don't bother with the ground. Period. An eagle is on his own level, and that's the level we on. We are on our own level because they scared we go. They scared we go achieve. They know our potential. They know your potential.
Why you act like you want us to achieve? But then when we start to make moves to achieve, it seems like that Cain and Abel syndrome kick in.
But you know what they tell you though. It ain't for them to help you anyway. God is your source.
That's true.
They don't have your vision. That's your vision. That's what God gave you. So quit worrying about them. You got to keep going. You ain't got time. One day maybe they'll come along, but if they don't, so well. That ain't going to stop your vision. Your vision is for the kid.
True that.
Everybody else got their own path. Cannot stop because I graduated from college last December. You know what my family member came to my graduation? Just one.
Mm.
Just one. Mm. But that ain't stopping me.
That's right.
I'm here for the kids. Everything I do now, I'm doing it for God, my family, and for the kids. That's my children.
Right. And brothers like
Curtis that I meet along the way. That's my new family.
Awesome, brother, Curtis, man. Awesome. Yes, sir.
That's my new family. The people you can get along the way that support you, that's your family.
That's right.
Your family was in Christ. That's your family.
Mm-hmm.
You was born in their bloodline. You got to let that go. That's what you got to pray about.
I get passionate. I don't mean to interrupt you, but I have to a certain extent. It still bothers me, you know, but I've come to that conclusion that you already said. I'm going to move on. Because my thing is like, look, I'm about to show, God about to show, you know, the ex-offender that no matter what your past is, you know, if you truly committed to transformation, you can make it happen, you know. You can make it happen. It's going to be painful. And when you take that jump, you're going to get bumped and bruised. You're going to get your leg broke. Like Steve Harvey said, your parachute ain't going to open immediately. It ain't gonna open immediately when you take that jump. So and I'm in that space where I'm taking the bumps and the bruises, bro. But you know, I believe my God is bigger than all of this. And I thank Brother Curtis for this venue to be able to express this little knowledge on zero tolerance, because this is only a step to bigger things.
Correct.
There's people right. People right now, man, are waiting. When I go and talk, I've talked to pastors, man, and laid out the paperwork, the statistics, all of the data that's backing up what I'm saying. they talk good, but then when I say, look, this ain't,
you know why?
This is not a program that you're going to be able to fatten your pocket with.
You know why? Like you just said, at the end of the day, you ain't trying to pass no collection plate around and feed nobody something for them to come back next week. You're trying to affect their lives forever.
Forever.
Not just, you're trying to change their lifestyles. See, when you go to church on Sunday, they there just to get a feel-good moment for that day. We're trying to impact lives every day.
Every day.
That's
I was asking them, I'm like, why, you know, there's no, like here in Saginaw, right now, there is no church with an open door that a child can go to daily to either play ball, to study, to be in a safe environment. The community centers are shut down, you know. And when you're talking about education, education is directly related to the quality of life that you're going to live. If you don't have no education, you're not going to be able to build no solid, stable life. You're not going to be able to educate yourself. You know, and so what are they going to do? We're going to revert to what? To survival. It's all about the survival of the fittest. Who profits off of that type of theory? Survival of the fittest. See? And even we got them among ourselves. I call them out among ourselves. We got business leaders here that won't reach out into the community, man. We got to get beyond that, man. It ain't just about you. You don't got big. Now come back. Help these kids. You know? Let's get these community centers open back up. Let's get these retired school teachers that are willing to volunteer and teach, you know, to tutor students. They don't have no place to do it. You study closing down schools, underfunding schools, punishing black students for minor rule violations, sending them to jail. When a white student do the same, a black or Hispanic, I can't leave my Hispanic brothers out, because they right there too, you know.
Yep.
But when a white student commits this same violation, oh, it's all right, ain't that cute? You know, come on. I mean, we got to call a spade a spade. You know, and that don't mean that I dislike or hate no, you know, I don't hate all white people. You know, I don't hate white people. You know, it is the system under which we live. The system is an oppressive system. It's just it's bottom line. And we have some that are saying, man, that look, we you know, just as long as I'm able to eat, you know, and not get, you know, not be down
stay
here,
out
I'm all right.
Yeah.
Stay out of harm's way.
Stay out of harm's
way.
Yeah.
Thank you, bro.
Yeah.
You know, as long as I can stay out of harm's way, I'm all right. I ain't going to make no fuss.
Fellas, gentlemen, man, I'm just sitting back just soaking all this in, and it's been great, but, man, this hour done flew by. So what I want to do.
Brother Curtis, make sure you get him my number so we can talk.
Oh, yeah, most definitely.
Yes, sir.
What I'm going to do is, Joe, if you would, go first and go ahead and tell us what you got coming up on the horizon, and then, Chess, I'm going to let you go, and then I'm going to go last.
Okay, on June 18th, I've been invited to speak in Columbus, Georgia, and at a fundraiser for Kaplan Elementary School. Kaplan Elementary School was created 3 years after the Emancipation Proclamation in 1868, and it stayed in existence and operation up until 1973. Right now, it's sitting doing nothing. So we're trying to come up with a viable and sustainable plan to put it back into motion and start to educate the children once again. So we focused on that right now, and we're trying to – I got to definitely get with my man Tyler to get these shirts, man. Brother, I'm coming, man. It's just we faced with a lot of issues right now, but I'm coming. I'm coming. Don't give up.
I'll be sure to relay that message to him. Matter of fact, I got to pick up some new ones he did in mine. All right, Chester,
okay.
What you got coming up, bro?
May 23rd, 10 o'clock a.m. at Brookhaven Middle School. It's Forest Somerville Road Elementary School, but we're located inside Brookhaven Middle School. That's how they did our kids. They put us inside of a middle school, cramming all the kids together. But on top of that, what we're doing is we're inviting all the men out in the community to come out, talk to the kids, just a meet and greet. I got a brother from NASA coming that's gonna do the STEM presentation with the kids,
yes,
with the fourth graders. Randy Brackens is his name. And we're just going to move on from here. This is our second event of the year. My group is called the Careth Group. I have two phenomenal women on my team, Virginia Moulton and Kirstine White. They help Curtis out too. They're just awesome. And like I said, they're allowing me to be the man that I need to be by taking the lead, and they're willing to step back and just help me. And I thank God for both of those sisters, and I know Curtis thanks God for them too. And so Monday morning,
exactly,
me and Curtis, we go do our thing.
Amen.
Yes, sir. Well, just to piggyback off of what Chester already announced, Monday morning I will be in the building with him at Brookhaven Middle School, but it's to benefit some of the elementary students. And I'll be there letting my presence be felt in whatever capacity Chester needs me to serve in. I'll be more than willing. I could be a door greeter, whatever the case may be. I will definitely be there. Chester's always supported all of my ventures. And again, he gave a shout-out to Kirstine White and Virginia Moulton. Oh, my God, everything we do, they there. They just there. You don't have to invite them. You don't have to call them. You just know that they'll be there. And we are so appreciative and eternally grateful for those two and others. I mean, it's a whole list of names we're going to name. I could, but for time's sake, I can't. But other thing I got coming up on June 18th, I have my Something for the Fellas 4th Annual Unity Day Pre-Father's Day Celebration that will be held in Decatur, Alabama, of course, at the AC Banks Park from 10 o'clock a.m. to 6 o'clock p.m. We're going to have inflatables for the kids. We're going to have free food. Again, we're going to have free food. We're going to have live entertainment. We're going to have security will be provided. It's just a Unity Day, Pre-Father's Day celebration. The whole goal of this thing is just to bring the community together and at the same time honor our fathers. And, again, a chance for the men, as Chester said, a chance for the men to be in attendance with their children to celebrate Father's Day. So we definitely got that coming up. And I just want to thank everybody that was on tonight's broadcast with Something for the Fellas. My brother, Dr. Joseph King, my brother Chester Ayers, my sister Linda Lowry in Selma, Alabama. She's always a welcome contributor to everyone that called in or came into the chat room. And I'm going to thank everyone in advance that's going to live stream this broadcast as soon as I get done with the studio version and re-promote it. I just want to thank all of you guys for taking time out of your busy schedules. And, man, continue to support myself, to support Something for the Fellas, support Dr. Joseph King, support Chester Ayers, and other people, especially men of the community, that's doing their thing to make a difference. And as always, God bless everyone. I love you all. Let's get it. Enough said.
Enough said.
Enough said.
Kirk, make sure if you get a brother my information, please, man, so we can connect.
You know I got you, brother. All right.
Yes, sir.
All right.
Yeah.